you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. This episode will be a departure from our usual style where I find a guest and bring them on. Instead, for the very first time, I appeared on a different podcast. In this case, the Zero Barefoot Shoes podcast, spelled X-E-R-O. And with the host, Stephen Sashin, we discuss biohacking versus bioharmonization, which is a term that I've coined. And by the end of the episode, I hope that you will agree with me that it is the better alternative to biohacking. If you don't agree with me, I would love to know why. You can go ahead and drop a comment in the show notes over at mindbodypeak.com/81 on the YouTube video associated with this episode, or in the article I wrote as a compilation of my current thoughts on the matter, which is also evolving as I learn more, as I better understand things, and as I continue to hone and refine my theories based on the feedback and conversations I'm having with people like you. Although Stephen and I talked about a branch of physics called quantum mechanics, quantum biology, or just the quantum, we're certainly not bashing it. In fact, I think it holds a lot of answers and things that we will not discover in the material realm, and we will have another guest on the show in the next month or two to discuss that, an actual quantum scientist. If you find this at all useful, I'd love it if you scrolled to the bottom of whatever player you're listening to this on and leave a quick rating and review. That's how I know what you're interested in, and also how I continue bringing you thought-provoking guests. It'll take you no more than 15 seconds, and there's a link to do so in the description of this episode. Okay, that's enough for now. I hope you and your families are having wonderful holidays. And without further ado, let's dive into this conversation with me and Stephen Sashin.
Let us get started. Nick, do me a favor. Tell people who you are and what you do. And then we're going to talk about your life as an ex-biohacker.
Stephen, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. My name is Nick Urban. I am an ex-biohacker, as you mentioned. And for those who don't know, biohacking is the art and science of changing your external environment and your internal environment. And I help curious high achievers find the little known answers and solutions to improve their health, performance, and quality of life. And I began back in high school when people would turn to me to try and figure out why what they were doing wasn't working and some of the alternative solutions that they couldn't find elsewhere, how to implement those into their lives. And many of them came across biohacking, and I was in that group as well. I thought that there's lots of little things you can do, little hacks that make a big difference. And indeed, that's true. But then at some point, just like a hack on a computer, eventually there's long-term repercussions. Those hacks morph and there's unintended side effects and consequences. And if you study the ancient practices of Ayurveda, traditional Chinese medicine, hermetic principles, all of these, I noticed a concept called vitalism emerging, where it's working with the more subtle things that are behind matter and how when you work with those, you're able to get longer lasting outcomes that are more effective and easier ultimately.
Okay, cool. Thank you. That was way more than I was expecting, which is great. So I want to come back to a couple of things you said and address them in a couple of different ways. But I'm going to start by asking this question. Do you mind if I'm obnoxious and really poke the bear, if you will?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. So you described biohacking as the art and science of fill in blank. Let's add the art, science, and pseudoscience of, because there's a lot of that. I was at a biohacking event in the past. I'm not going to say how long ago because I don't want to give away which one it was, and I've been to a bunch of them, where I met some people who actually are publishers in that world. And they, I don't know how it happened, but in the conversation, they said, yeah, 95% of the things in this room are complete placebos. And so let's start there with what's your take on, and I'm curious, you said some of these hacks actually do work. I'm curious about what things you think do work and what things you think are placebos. And again, my warning, I may suggest that things that you think do work may be placebos or may work for reasons different than what people say. Yes. I could be wrong. You might just, you know, we might be on the same page on this. We haven't talked about this, but it may be that we got some placebo things going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you that with that. And there is so much in this world and really anything in the health and wellness and performance world that is placebo, has a very strong element of pseudoscience. So I'm in agreement with you there. And I think some of the things that I notice immediate and profound effects from on the biohacking side would be things like certain nootropics. Like it's like you, if you take caffeine, most people feel that if you've never taken caffeine before, and there's other related compounds you can take that create a very immediate and noticeable effect. And there's a lot of technologies. I actually have some behind me, like quantum technologies that you can use surrogate endpoints and biomarkers and see how that influences physiological processes like heart rate variability, brainwave coherence. And you can see how some of them impact that. Right. And as like the studies have shown, placebo and nocebo, the opposite end, where you believe something won't work, are among the strongest effects in all of medicine. So
you mentioned that a lot of these things can have long-term unintended consequences. Can you say more about the kind of things that you've seen, those kind of consequences, and what you notice? And I'll share one with you after you've done that.
Yeah, before we do, I want to keep poking that bear a little bit more, because I think that's a really interesting topic that doesn't get enough attention. And one thing is, like, yes, humans are very susceptible to placebo, but animals and newborns and really like things like that, they don't consciously think the same way us skeptical adults do. They're more immune. So I like to look at and see how it affects them. Maybe you can do some experiments watering, like using the special water that the company makes or whatever it is, and try watering plants instead of drinking yourself and see, compare that to a control, which has normal water. And
no, I think that's brilliant. And, but you know, even then, so I'll tell you where the human still comes into that equation. It's whether they know how to set up the experiment correctly.
Yes.
So, you know, if you're going to do the plant watering thing, you don't do it with one plant that's getting watered and one plant that's getting, you know, watered with the magic water. You do it with like 20 plants that are each, you know, that you've divided or more, because as someone who grows plants, I have an indoor hydroponic garden. I can tell you some of those things grow better than others under identical conditions.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how badly people set up simple, seemingly simple experiments.
Yeah. And then to make it even more comprehensive, if you have the time and resources, you would also want to blind the experimenter to not know which water is which on the plants, but that's a whole nother level. And just for like a simple at home thing you can try with your quantum devices or whatever they are.
This permeates science. So I don't know if you remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the whole phenomenon around the idea of cold fusion. Were you around for that?
A little bit.
Well, the gist is some guys at a university in Arizona, maybe ASU, but I can't remember, they had claimed that they had created fusion at room temperature. I mean, we're still trying to create fusion at, you know, 100 times the temperature of the sun temperature. So they had claimed that it was happening at room temperature. So this one physicist said to them, so your theory is that using heavy water, which is water where it's a hydrogen isotope, that heavy water is what makes this thing work. So the way to test this is by looking for testing a counterfactual. Test something that's the opposite and see what happens. So get rid of the heavy water and just use regular water and see if you get the same results. If you do, then it had nothing to do with the heavy water, which means that this whole thing was fake. Yeah. And so they went, well, it's definitely not. So sure, we'll go test it. And they tested it with regular water and it turned out that it was fake. So, this kind of mistaken causality permeates human thinking at every level, from dumb people to the smartest people you've ever met, who at some point kind of circle around and become dumb again. So, that was a very good point, that if you can demonstrate that something works on someone who has no idea, or an animal, brilliant. But then I guess you've got to, try to get you out of the equation as well. So that's one. All right. So last one, from your intro, we're still in your intro. There are often, not always, often simpler explanations for some of these effects than what many people would like. And sometimes there are explanations that I and other people don't have answers for yet. I used to do Aikido and Tai Chi. And both of those, there are lots and lots of claims about vital forces and Qi or Ki and how they work, where I was hanging out with people who just wanted to get rid of the mythology and see if this stuff really worked without any of that. And with Aikido in particular, there are things that you do to someone's anatomy that work on everybody and have nothing to do with any magical energy. That I, if you grab my wrist in a particular way and I move in a particular way, it locks up your joints in a way that I can then easily throw you onto the ground. It doesn't require any building up, your chi and your ki in this case. And I used to get in trouble a lot because the dojo that I went to, that's the way we practiced. I assumed it was like that everywhere. Then I would go to other dojos when I was traveling, and some big black belt would try to move me and he couldn't move me, and I could throw him around effortlessly. And it then turned out often that was the guy, it was his dojo that I was in. And people, you don't do that. That's not showing respect. My response is, I don't care about respect. I just proved that he's full of shit. So, and I'm not trying to prove that. It was like, I just demonstrated that by accident because I didn't know any better. Now at the same time, I met a Chinese Qigong guy who, this is my last story, I promise, for now, who I saw a documentary with him where it looked like he was electrocuting the people that touched him. And it looked completely fake. It looked like they were just throwing themselves into the air and bouncing off the walls and looked completely fake. It turned out he got brought to America. I got to meet him with about 20 other people in a room, and he's puts his hands about 6 inches apart from each other and is saying through the translator that he's just sending this electrical current back and forth between his hands. And he motions for me to come up and feel it. And I'm thinking, ah, crap, I'm going to not feel anything. And I'm just going to make him look like an idiot because, I've done things like this and there's no there. Okay. So I move my hand from above his two hands into the middle of his two hands. And it felt like I was getting electrocuted. I didn't bounce off the walls. I didn't do things that looked insane, but I literally felt like if I grabbed a electrical fence or whatever that word is that I'm looking for, put my finger in a socket by accident, which yes, I've done. And I was like, wait, hold on. Let me try this again. And I tried it again by moving my hand into his hands from a different direction. And each time, now this was a good 25 years ago. If it happened now, sadly, he's dead. Maybe I would perceive it differently. But at the time and to this day, I have no idea what happened. Yeah. Maybe there's a there. Interestingly, none of his students could replicate what he was doing. So, but I'm willing to, suspend disbelief and say, I don't know. I mean, I've experienced some things that I can't explain, but I don't have the opportunity to reinvestigate them now. So anyway, that was a long tangent from vitalism. There are things where that story doesn't necessarily hold up, but it may be pointing to something that we just don't understand yet that may still be materialistic, but we don't understand it. So I'm just intrigued. I guess that was a long tirade for, I find that one interesting, but it's one of the really fun places to go. Let's see if we can really investigate this. Let's see if we can find a counterfactual. Let's see if we can find a way of controlling this. Let's see if we can find a way to remove extraneous factors that really put it to the test. And so with that, can you tell me any of the things that you think of that involve vital force stuff that we might want to take a look at?
Sure. Well, the first thing that I want to comment on is that you're right. In this world, there's the two camps. There's the materialist and there's the vitalist, like life force, energy type. And there's a huge divide between them. And very few people want to explore and challenge each other's ideas because it's more of like an attack on one or the other and saying like, oh, they're totally wrong or we're totally right, whatever it is. So I love the discussions where you're able to actually like say, what if you do this and think about that?
Well, look, this is one of the reasons that I like you is that while there are certain things that you believe, you are one of the few people that I've met who's willing to go, okay, wait, hold on, let me take a look at that when given the opportunity. Let's go on back to the unintended consequences part that you saw from certain biohacks.
Sure. Well, the first one is that because of the way we operate in the reductionist paradigm, we tend to say we want this outcome. We know this pathway will help us get there. So we'll use certain drugs. Say metformin is one that's been in the news recently for its longevity purposes and its potential benefits, doing all kinds of things related to autophagy and just overall life extension. And we think we understand the causal relationship between change this pathway, these biomarkers, and get this outcome. And then decades after it's been in use, all of a sudden we start uncovering a bunch of new side effects that we didn't realize were there the whole time. And so by taking the approach of just like going in and trying to hack this one little system, this one component of the system, it results in a lot of downstream effects that go on for decades in some cases and eventually get noticed.
So on the metformin one, I mean, I was aware that it was sort of the bell of the longevity ball about 5 years ago, but I never bothered trying to take it. But I haven't heard what are some of the side effects that people are now seeing now that there's been a handful of, quote, biohackers who've been pumping metformin. And include in that what metformin was originally for, so people have a context for that.
Yeah, so metformin is still a drug used to treat diabetes and keep blood sugar under control. That's its primary use. And in the last handful of years, the off-label use has been to promote life extension. And I say new in quotes, because the side effect that came up in the studies, I think 2 or so, 3 months ago, was that people taking it can have offspring with birth defects.
Oh, just that.
Yeah. So like a little minor inconvenience there. And there's a bunch of others, like a lot of question marks around it. It permanently can impair your ability to absorb and assimilate one of the B vitamins. And the half-life, we know what it is for the drug, but it seems to have other impacts on the body, such as changing the anabolism, catabolism, tissue building, tissue breakdown state longer than the half-life. So it's a little unsure what's going on there. And that's just for one particular drug that's been very well studied over the decades. And only now are we understanding that it can have these really drastic side effects.
There's some guys who invited me into a group that's all about longevity. And they say, you know, we invite the people who are doing the cutting edge research. Don't you want to hear about this stuff 20 years before anyone else does? I said, no, I want to hear about it 20 minutes after the human trials are done.
Exactly. And along those same lines, another one that's gaining popularity is transhumanism and CRISPR-Cas9, or directly modifying the genome of humans.
What could go right?
Yeah, exactly. That's a better question. What could go right? And that's becoming more and more popular. And we don't even fully understand the genome in its entirety, because until 2 or so decades ago, we believed that there was a bunch of junk DNA, the microRNA, and we discovered that actually, no, those have really important functions. Like those have to do with your epigenetics or the expression of your genes, and you don't want to just ignore those.
Yeah, I mean, all of this is kind of predicated on a rather comical idea that and there are certain times where you can do this, where you can make a very small intervention that will have no unforeseen consequences. And humans are horrible at misrepresenting and underestimating the potential of unforeseen consequences in all aspects of human endeavors. I mean, I sometimes drive around and I look and I go, I can't see one thing that we've done that hasn't had more harmful repercussions than beneficial ones. It's pretty wild. And of course, we will only prove that to be permanently true if we all just set off nukes and crush ourselves in some way. So then that will be the proof that we are a bunch of morons who thought we were smart, which is a problem. I don't know if you know anything. Another one of those drugs that was kind of the bell of the longevity ball was rapamycin.
Yep.
What do you know about that? Because I know nothing about it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. It's also one of those, and it's an immunosuppressive drug, which that's how it works. That's why it has such good life extension properties. For me, it seems way too risky for most people. I don't know why you'd want to take that when there's a lot of other things, lower hanging fruit that are safer and don't have side effects. In fact, they have side benefits. So to me, it just doesn't make sense. It's another one of those that I see people talking about it and taking it. And if you want to take something, there's things that have much better safety profiles.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And I want to ask you the things that have better safety profiles. So I'm going to inject this and then we'll do that. I was experimenting with nicotinamide riboside and not with nicotinamide mononucleotide, which for people who know them better as NR or NMM or NMN. And neither of them really did anything for me. I didn't notice anything. And the idea is that just taking niacin has a better impact on those pathways. And annoyingly, I seem to not, this is a case where I don't have an immunity to placebos, I have a hypersensitivity to niacin. Like if I was taking 25 gram pills, I'd get a big flush and it never changed. I mean, I did this for months and I never acclimated to it. I was really kind of bummed because that one looks like maybe there's a there. And niacin is about as not a big deal as an intervention goes as one can think of, but doesn't work for me.
Yeah, and I hope you're not taking it in the gram range because a huge dose is considered...
Oh, no. Sorry, 25 milligrams is what I meant to say.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, 25 grams, that's ridiculous. An ounce of niacin, that's pretty funny. it just knocked me on my butt. So that was an interesting one. So let's go back to, and this list leads us into the section of our conversation about being, what was your term that you're not now a biohacker, you're a bio...
Harmonizer.
I love you. So let's talk about one of those things that you alluded to that's a milder intervention than an off-label drug that is seemingly doing something.
Sure. So the first reason I like to harmonize rather than hack is because, as you alluded to earlier, the body is a system of systems. It's a cybernetic system, meaning that there's no linear cause and effect. When you change one thing, it changes a bunch of other things. And so a lot of the best practices and principles of bioharmony that I've come across seem ridiculous when you call them hacks, such as getting enough sleep, such as going on a walk, such as learning to build your personal resilience via something such as exposure to extreme temperatures, the sauna, the ice bath. These types of things, they just do not fit into the bucket of a biohack, but they are in harmony and they're helping the body do its own processes better and more efficient.
Oh, I like it. So, even some of those have become somewhat mythologized. So like I'm thinking about sleep. I had this conversation just the other day with someone on the podcast where the whole idea is, you know, you need to have a pitch black room because that's what our ancestors did, except for the fact that that's not what they did, because many of our ancestors lived in places where maybe there was something, a roof over their head, but no walls. And when there's a full moon, the ambient light is pretty damn bright. So, you know, there's that. Or I think there's a good amount of mythology around cold plunge stuff, which by the way, I do because I just get a kick out of it. I can't say I enjoy it because when I get it, my cold plunge, now that it's getting cold at night here, is at about 40 degrees. And when I jump in, I yell every expletive that I've ever thought of for the first 2 seconds. And then I kind of get with the groove and I just like it. It literally does feel refreshing when I get out. I really enjoy it. And maybe there's other benefits. I don't know. I don't care. I just get a kick out of it. But that one has been seriously mythologized, I think.
There's also some very cool properties that are unique to cold and to heat. One that I've noticed personally is when I wear a continuous glucose monitor so I can see how my blood glucose changes throughout the day, and I'll wear that for 2 weeks or so. I noticed that when I take a ice bath in the morning, no matter what I do, my blood sugar will be very stable the rest of the day. So that's one that's not often talked about, but it's one a powerful effect that I've noticed. And there's a lot of claims about its effect on the conversion of white fat to brown fats and then helping with weight loss. That cold is a stressor, so it stimulates the production and release of
norepinephrine,
epinephrine, cortisol, all these things, and changes your neurochemical state as well. And I noticed that I feel great when I get out of the cold bath. So that could be it. It could be something else entirely. Is it going to change your life in itself? Probably not.
You're talking to a guy who was a member of the Polar Bear Club, aka jumping into ice water on New Year's Day, 17 years until it was like, I'm done. And of course, the joke is that the sauna can do many of the same things. It's like they're both affecting heat shock proteins, which is a weird thing to say that both high temperatures and low temperatures affect the same proteins, but they seem to. And who is it? Brad Pilon or Pilon? I don't know how he says his last name. Has a whole book about how heat exposure can be beneficial, including for weight loss, because it's basically telling your body you don't need to store fat. So it's an interesting idea. I haven't noticed any changes in my body fat or weight from both, you know, hot tub saunas and cold plunges. I just like them.
Yeah. Well, there's also some cool benefits that I like of the heat, such as the ability to increase growth hormone, second to none, from a nice long session in the sauna.
So why am I still 5'5"?
Guess too late on that train. That's the one. And like you alluded to, the heat shock proteins, the FOXO4, like all these have beneficial longevity effects. So I think rather than taking these designer molecules, start off with the lifestyle basics, whether it's getting outside for a walk, it's seeing the sun, or it's going in the sauna. These all can have disproportionate effects. And ultimately, going for a walk isn't that hard to do, doesn't need to take that long. And in my blood sugar tracking experiment, I noticed that that had the biggest impact of anything on my blood sugar. Better than any supplement I've taken, better than the cold plunge, better than the sauna. By far and away, a 5-minute walk after my meal made a huge difference. And I just saw a New York Times article came out recently. It said 2 minutes of walking can make a difference. So it doesn't need to be long.
No, I think that key thing, though, is it is right after a meal doing that. I've been trying to do that. Mostly, I've been walking more lately because we've got a dog. And I get up before my wife does. So I'm the 6 a.m. dog walker. So we'll go out for half an hour to an hour. Hasn't changed anything about my body composition. But it is really enjoyable. And when he's not chasing squirrels or bunnies, you know, it's just delightful as well. I think I'm going to have to get my shoulder reattached to my body after this morning's bunny event, because it caught me totally off guard. But I remember reading this years ago that they had done an experiment just, you know, after people had eaten a high fat meal, and one group went and took a walk right after the meal and the other group didn't. And then they just drew blood, and you could just see the difference between fat mobilization from the people who had taken a walk, where it cleared the bloodstream very quickly, versus those who hadn't taken the walk, where it was just hanging out there for like 18 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I love that you got the 24-hour glucose monitor. I've never felt the urge to do that one, but it is entertaining. What are the other things you've done that are that kind of experimentation? And of course, what are the other harmonizing things that you found that are for real from your experience?
Yeah. So first of all, another core principle of harmonization is that everything in the body serves a purpose. We might not understand that purpose yet, but if you get things removed, you choose to ignore things, that comes at your own peril, and you may or may not suffer a consequence from it. One that sounds very simple, and to me, it was like life-changing when I discovered, was recognizing that emotion plays a vital role in understanding the circumstance I'm in and like what kind of response I should give. Instead of just suppressing the way I feel, like exploring it and trying to trace back where it comes from and why I feel a certain way.
Is it too personal to ask for an example?
Yeah. So when I get in a conflict with my partner and something really bothers me and I just decide to storm off because it seems like the only logical thing to do. And then when I dissect, I'm like, why did I storm off? I didn't have to storm off. I should have been more present. I should have told her that this really upsets me. And it seemed inaccessible at the time. And then I was able to trace that back to previous life experiences and find the root of that and try and understand why I felt that way and give myself permission to feel that and to understand it and to accept it. And once I accepted it, as strange as it sounds, I feel less intensely when things come up now.
Mm. Yeah, I refer to that as playing the movie frame by frame. So, you know, just like look at it one moment at a time and see what was I thinking? What belief did I have that led to this behavior? What was the thought? Then what was the feeling that that engendered? And what was the belief that then followed that one? I've done similar things. I'll tell you my favorite one. Lena, my wife, had asked me to make some sort of behavioral change. I don't know what it was. Let's call it putting the toilet seat down, which is not my thing because I like to sit down when I pee. It's the only chance I get to sit down sometimes. So, but whatever it was, and I'm not, I don't tend to ask for behavioral changes. It's just not my thing to ask people to do something different that way. And so I was really angry for whatever reason that she'd asked me to do this thing when I would never do anything like that. And I thought, all right, so she's asking me to do this thing. I don't do it. But what do I do instead? Mm-hmm. And it hit me like a ton of bricks that Lena likes to keep things really neat. And our house is pretty neat. But like her desk at the end of the day, clean. My desk at the end of the day, where's the desk? So I realized that, you know, there are a couple of places in the house where I have piles of stuff. Mm-hmm. And she endures my piles of stuff. And there's no doubt that her having to see those multiple times a day is and not, you know, ask me to leave is a much more amazing thing and takes much more something than whatever it would take for me to figure out whatever that behavioral change was that she asked for. And then I immediately went and apologized and said, you know, look, I can't promise that I'm going to do it, but I will do the best I can. Feel free to remind me. But also, you know, I can't thank you enough for putting up with my sloppiness where I know that must be unbearable for you. And she was very sweet. She said, I know that you have limited places where you do it. And as long as it's in those limited places, I'm okay with that. If it extends past there, that's going to be a problem. Uh-huh. So to your point, yeah, we didn't need a therapist. We didn't need to process our feelings. I mean, I just took care of by recognizing the pattern that I had and why I had it. So that's a great one. I appreciate you pointing that one out.
Yeah.
Any other harmonizing things that you've done other than emotional?
Yeah, I can run through some of my principles of bioharmony.
Please.
So the first is self-sovereignty. And that is the idea that you don't want to outsource anything that you want to keep long-term, or at least let it decay and atrophy. That can be your memory, or in the case of zero, that could be your arches.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next one is oppositional consequences. When you fight the body and you suppress things, however that is, whether it's a natural practice or it's a intervention, you have to accept that there could be consequences whenever you undergo one of those types of things.
People love to ignore the potential negative side effects because they have the fantasy they're going to get only the positive ones.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We imagine this future happy state. And then if we think that there's a way of getting there, we're going to lock onto that and ignore all the contradictory information. That's why there are certain people who fill up workshop rooms every weekend in hotel rooms and get tens of thousands of dollars per person for, you know, based on that.
Yeah. The third principle is the principle of innate intelligence, that the body really knows how to self-regulate, return to homeostasis, to rebuild, to regenerate. And on the opposite end, that by taking certain interventions, we're assuming that we know better than the body and that that will lead to a better outcome. And there's instances when you want to go out and make sure you do the right thing and the body gets stuck in a loop or something. And then you need some outside intervention. But for a lot of things, such as a broken arm, the cast is not repairing the arm. It's your body that's repairing it. And we're just supporting it.
Here's where I'll poke at it again. The flip side is there are certain things where, like, I was taking a walk with a friend of mine and she said, I'm just trying to listen to my body. So I can eat the right things. And I just burst into hysterics. And I said, I know what your body wants to eat. French fries, ice cream, chocolate cake. You just have the idea that if you quote, listen to your body, you'll end up eating some things that right now you don't enjoy that will then change your body into something that when you look in the mirror, you're going to like it. And that's pretty funny because if you ask everyone on the planet, do they like what they see in the mirror? You won't find anybody who says yes, honestly. So one of the functions of being human is looking in the mirror and going, or, you know, some variation thereof. So that was an interesting one, because I think what you're saying, and please correct me if I'm getting this wrong, is that there are times where something does get out of whack and your body will show that in some way. I'm thinking of this one's an easy one. Our dog suddenly had two warts, one on right inside of its lip and one on the outside of his lip, and it's a papillomavirus. And he just didn't have the antibodies for that. And it just, you know, plays its course in the course of 3 weeks or so. But so here's this thing that in this case, you don't need to do anything about it. The body will take care of itself. But there are things that can pop up for whatever reason, some environmental impact, some emotional thing you're doing, whatever it is, stress and however we define stress, that could cause your body to get out of whack and stay out of whack until you do make some intervention. So what you're implying is that if given the opportunity, that's what I'm saying, given the opportunity, more often than not, many things can take care of themselves. Now, there are many things that just get out of whack and they're out of whack. Yes. So if you get, you know, glioblastoma, you got a brain tumor that's most likely incurable. If you get, you know, there's a handful of things that's just the way it is, because these things don't work perfectly. They're not designed to keep us alive forever. You know, that's a whole other aspect of it is, so given all the right circumstances, it will do the best it can. I'm going to say it that way. See if you disagree with that one. But sometimes, you know, you're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. That's precisely it. And there's a lot of things the body is capable of doing that are miracles when they happen, and we can't explain them yet exactly how they're working in terms of like regenerative abilities. But yes, for the most part, you have to support the body, or you should support the body, and recognize that it's just it's a biological organism and it's doing its best.
It's definitely not designed to do the thing that you want. It's definitely not designed to keep you looking like you did when you were in your teens or 20s, for some of us, or, you know, continuing to be able to perform that way up until, in whatever way perform means for you. I was not going the way that some people just took it by my qualifying it. you know, into your whatevers. Again, we're going to die at some point. Things, you know, skin gets saggier, muscles get smaller, unless you're juicing in or variations thereof. And I guess perhaps, you know, the hardest intervention or the hardest thing to do with that, maybe for some people, is being okay with that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the whole longevity sector is fighting that idea. And while it's true that we will die at some point, there's things you can do that will drastically speed up your arrival at that destination and also ways to slow it down a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of these, you know, they could not be more simple. Like you were saying, get some sleep, get outside, see the sun, you know, eat things that you enjoy, to a certain, and even the eating thing. I have a friend who had, breast cancer, and she was living with somebody who was a vegan something chef and was just feeding her all this green stuff and like every healthy thing to try and cure her. And every 2 weeks she would call me and I would say, oh, is it time? And she would say, yes. And we would go out to the local donut shop and I would buy one of everything they made and say, just take as much or as little of any of these that you want. Basically, here's the buffet. Enjoy. And I said, which do you think is better for you? How much fun this couple of hours is eating however many donuts you want, or, you know, thinking that if you don't have a green drink tomorrow, you're going to die. And she said, yeah, the stress of that is probably worse than the fun of this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's also one of the ancient principles of rhythm and pulsation. Thing is, if you do one thing long term, your body will compensate. It will downregulate enzymes. It'll change neurotransmitter baseline levels, all that kind of stuff, so that you adapt to be more efficient in your current state. So if you every once in a while change things, you go out and you enjoy yourself, not only are you getting that connection and you're getting the experience of being a modern human, but you're also doing your body favors, even if it's a subpar nutrition in that example.
Yeah. My thing with donuts is I find myself craving them every now and then. And when it gets to a point that it's okay, I can't drive by this donut shop without getting one, then I will go do that. But that's it. I don't have very many donuts per year any longer. And I used to eat a lot of donuts because donuts are awesome. They should be one of the four basic food groups.
They are pretty great. And you were mentioning your friend earlier who was trying to listen to her body, and her body was telling her to eat ice cream and maybe donuts and junk like
chocolate
that.
Chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Tell me about chocolate cake.
Yeah. Chocolate cake. I mean, there's all kinds of things that fall into that category that are non-negotiables. They should be in everyone's diet for the sheer enjoyment, if nothing else. But that leads into the fourth principle of bioharmony, and that is biofeedback amnesia. Modern humans have lost the ability to access what's actually going on inside of us. And if you're listening to your body, it might tell you, sure, grab that donut. That'll taste great. And then you might eat that donut. And an hour later, you will notice that, oh, okay, my blood sugar spiked and then crashed. And now I just need a nap. I need a nap for at least a half an hour. And then instead of weighing whether or not you want that, you're weighing the want versus the total cost. And that can lead to a very different equation in terms of the overall want.
My favorite version of that is you eat something, typically something like scrambled eggs, and then for completely unrelated reasons you end up with a stomach bug. So you get get some sort of stomach flu, and if this happened in close enough proximity temporarily, you won't be able to eat scrambled eggs again for years.
Yeah,
because your brain will have put two and two together and said, ooh, it must be because of the scrambled eggs, because it's always looking for something. Mm-hmm. And it had nothing to do with the scrambled eggs. But I find that one kind of funny. So it's in many ways the opposite of what you just described. But the one you just described, that's a really good one, because you're right. I mean, we aren't good at we're always looking for patterns, but we're not good at identifying certain patterns, especially if there's enough of a time gap between the cause and the effect.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things, especially with nutrition. There's usually a short term, a medium term, and a long term. For example, when I'm assessing someone's core, I can assess it one day and then I can tell them, try not eating gluten for a week. And even if they're not gluten sensitive, you can actually feel a difference in their ability to activate their core after they completely take another diet. And you won't necessarily know that. You don't feel it because most of us eat gluten all the time, but their body notices a difference and is able to exert more force when they made that change.
That's really interesting. How much, when it comes to diet nutrition, or let's use gluten as this example, how much individual variability do you see?
Oh, tremendous. There's a really fantastic book that I like called Biochemical Individuality by Roger Williams, I believe it is. And he goes through the body systematically and goes through every organ, every enzyme, as much as you possibly can, that he knew of back then when it was written a couple decades ago. And he shows that there's tremendous differences between people, up to 50-fold differences in enzyme activity, stomachs that are on either end, one is tiny and the other is three times bigger. And so there's a lot of variation. And that's part of what all of this is about, is the bio-individuality of everything, that what works great for me might not work at all for you.
Yeah. This is something that is so problematic for humans who want a simple solutions, like give me the ABC, give me the plan, and let me just stick to it, because we like things simple. But man, just is not like that. The first Paleo FX conference that I went to, I was saying, you know, you all think that everyone should be eating a shit ton of meat. And I actually have a genetic disorder, and I don't taste the savory flavors in meat. So it just tastes like metallic-y mush. So that ain't going to happen. And and of course the joke is, while they had a panel discussion with like 10 people who were the paleo experts at the time, and each one of them was basically trying to convince people that their version of paleo was the way you had to eat, and no one acknowledged that each one of them had a different version of paleo. I mean, they acknowledged that, but they weren't acknowledging that it was, that there wasn't going to be a resolution to the fact that, you know, not, no one was going to suddenly have present something where the other nine people were going to go, yep, you're right, I was mistaken. So know, each one was a different thing. And it was, so much of it was based on their own personal experience more than any sort of research or data collection, which is problematic.
Well, that's one of the big issues in the health and wellness world, is that people are on this journey themselves. They explore, they try different things, and it works great for them. So then they start researching it, they fall victim to the confirmation bias, and then they realize that this is the only way humans should operate. And then they tell everyone else that, and they create like highly successful books and media libraries, and that spreads. And you don't understand, like, with only seeing that, you don't understand the whole backstory and what we were just talking about, the individuality of everything. Yeah.
So are there any other principles that we have left out?
Well, the last one we've talked about a bit, and that is critical application. And critical application is doing the research yourself, not just relying on any one source, including everything we say today and every conversation, and then going in and trying things where safe. Don't take our word for it, but go actually try it yourself where it's safe and notice what you get or don't get, and to take notes, log it down, and practice all the principles of harm reduction, just to make sure that just because this worked for a bunch of other people doesn't mean it will or will not work for you. So you learn, implement, and reflect.
Dude, which part of just tell me what to do did you not hear?
The new Die book is coming any day now.
I'm on the I don't know when I'm going to get hit by a bus diet. So, you know, when the donut calls me, the donut calls.
And
you know, what's actually really funny, the hardest thing for me in situations like that is I'll have the donut and I know after, like, I only want like two bites, but I hate throwing food away.
Well, I'm the opposite way. Once I get started with anything, I finish it and look for all the scraps and eat those too. So my best bet is just to avoid bringing all that stuff in the house to begin with.
Yeah. See, I don't, I'm not a bingy kind of guy. We've had a pint of Ben and Jerry's in our fridge for, I think, 9 years. And we each had, you know, a few bites, and then it's, I don't know why it's still sitting there, frankly, but I can do just the parts that I like, but it is very hard for me. Like, I went out with some new friends for dim sum on this past weekend, and it was really hard for me to like leave something on a plate that I liked. And so I didn't, I ate it. And it was not gastrointestinally satisfying in a few hours later, but I had such a good time when I was doing it that it made up for it.
Yeah.
So, which is part of the principle we've talked about. You know, that's an interesting thing, is that some of what we've talked about really is a little hedonic. It's the value of enjoyment is, I think, greatly overlooked.
Yeah.
Like genuine enjoyment, not just, you know, sort of temporary getting a buzz off something, but something, you know, that really is, even if it's not necessarily great for you, the pleasure part will outweigh the, you know, temporary negative consequences.
Absolutely. Like when I'm going out and spending time with friends, I have no problem eating things I won't usually, or stretching the window in which I'm consuming calories a little longer than usual, because ultimately, like, that social connection and the enjoyment, all of that is going to outweigh any temporary lapse of my usual routine.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. So is there anything first of all, this has been a blast, and thank you for diving into my long-winded examination of some of these ideas. Because frankly, you know, again, like one of the things I appreciate about you is that you can look at this stuff from different angles and land somewhere that is, how do I want to put it, maybe more accessible to human beings. And the fact that you just continue to experiment, of course, is a really fun one. So of course, I'm always curious what you discover either that's working or some idea that is worth investigating. So anything that we left out?
One thing that I recommend is if you're trying to understand and learn about a subject, go around and pick out a handful of books about that subject from all different perspectives, and then you can see what they agree on, what they disagree on, and you can explore each of those avenues yourself. But if you're just relying on one interview, one book, one YouTube video, you're never going to get the full picture, and you're going to be prey to all kinds of biases.
Yeah, what you're prey to is your wallet getting empty. I mean, that's the biggest one. It really does amaze me the number of people who spend inordinate amounts of money going to workshops or doing various things year after year after year, despite the lack of demonstrable benefits they've received, and because the sunk cost is so high. If they realize that what they've been doing is wasting their money, it's almost more humiliating and upsetting than just continuing to do something that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Oh, humans and their minds. They're so silly.
Oh, and the one last thing is with a lot of these lifestyle practices, these like healthy bioharmonization habits, instead of having unintended side effects, a lot of them have unintended benefits. So if you improve your sleep, that's going to translate to better performance. You're going to show up better, less emotionally reactive in your relationships. And you don't need to do all of these things and spend 18 hours a day optimizing your life to start feeling and seeing and noticing a difference. You can start small with a few minute walk after a meal, or trying maybe blackout curtains and realize that yes, some nights in the natural world, the moon will be brighter. And if you can't get that, it's not the end of the world. Like, you'll sleep just fine, maybe a little worse than normal, but then you can bounce right back from that and adapt.
I love it. EGANT, I'm trying to think where I wanted to go. Since I can't think of anywhere, we can wrap it up. So Nick, if people want to find out more about bioharmony and what you're doing, et cetera, how would they do that with you?
Yeah, so they can go ahead and reach out to me on my website, nickurban.me, and that'll bring you to a Linktree-like page where you can see the website, the podcast that I host, and my social channels, all that stuff. And if they want to reach out to me directly, the socials are great, or they can fill out the contact form on my website. And I personally read and respond to every email I get. So if it takes a couple weeks, don't take it personally, but I love hearing from everyone and I look forward to ongoing conversations.
Awesome. Well, I hope people do take you up on that invitation because again, you know, we are all, any of us who are health and fitness minded, are always looking for something that will make a difference in our life. And to find someone that you can reach out to and at least lean on to point you in a good direction if they don't have an answer, is a very valuable thing. And you're doing a great service by being someone who's able to look at these things logically and critically, and still be, you know, really one of those people who likes to investigate and do more than the average bear in that process. So much, much appreciated. And for everyone else, thank you for being here is the simplest thing I can say. Go out, have some fun, and live life feet first.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.